to say that, you know, the government is, you know, saying that there's just no more money for the project, when in fact there isn't really a lot of overhead anyway. Most of the people who actually work there are already paid civil servants who are just sort of on loan to the project, and that the additional funds are really not that important. And she went on to say that they had suggested that maybe the project do its own fundraising. And she was saying how outrageous that is, that we, you know, aren't at the point now where we, you know, are going to have our own army of lesbians and gays. I mean, the whole idea of, like, raising funds, you don't raise funds for police services, you don't raise funds for CLSCs, those things are taken care of, and we pay taxes, we are rightful citizens of this community, and therefore those services should be provided by us. And so that's what basically she was saying. And so it's what she. I asked her whether there was any way that we could support the project, and she said, "Of course, you could send letters to the project of support, and it's called Dire Enfin la Violence, and they're at 2035 Amherst. I don't have the postal code," and she said the phone number really fast, and I stupidly didn't write it down. However, having said that...
Actually, I think if you look in this week's Hour or Mirror, I think it's the Hour on the fourth page.
That's right.
There's an article about Mirror. Exactly this, and the phone number is there.
Yes, and their phone number is always listed in Frigg and Gazelle as well, in the little community index at the back, so you can always find it there. You can give them a call. If you need their services also, by all means, give them a call, and that's what they're there for. And it's not about to die immediately, obviously. There's still some pressure being put on, and she's hoping that by September she'll have a solid answer from the people who are in charge of funding the project.
Excellent recap.
Thank you.
And now on to something else entirely. Last night was Queer Comic Night at the Club Soda as part of the Just for Laughs Festival. And this has now become a yearly tradition. And Sabrina Matthews is here with us, and she participated in last night's Queer Comics extravaganza.
Yeah, it was great.
That was going to be my first question. Did you enjoy yourself?
Oh, I had a blast.
Yeah.
I love performing, but the audience was so wonderful. And this is such a nice festival. I mean, there's so many of us. You know, we get to run into so many professional friends. And industry-wise, it's important. You know, people see you. And the audiences are great, and they're really taking very good care of us. So all around, it's been great.
Good.
I got like 2 hours of sleep last night, so I'm going to say great a lot, but I really mean it. I don't have any synonyms on the top of my head right now.
Well, we were hanging out after the show when we saw the big budget van pull up, and we saw you all get into it, and we thought, where are they going now? Where'd you go?
Oh, we went back to the hotel. Okay. We're all staying at the Delta.
Oh, yeah.
Unless you're a stalker, in which case we're staying at Howard Johnson's.
Did you go out?
No, we sat in the bar like,
okay,
big lazy farts and ate and drank. We were going to go over to the, they have the all-night parties over at the Comedy Museum, and we were going to go over there, but we didn't make it anymore. So sometimes after a show, you just go home and just sort of like become a wet shirt in a chair, you know? It's great.
Yeah.
Great.
So it must have been fun, there's a bunch of you, and you can kind of go out and rehash the evening or just kind of do that post-incident thing.
Well, usually, you know, it gets to be like 1 a.m. and you start telling tales out of school about people who aren't there, and you know, and I won't repeat any.
No,
but,
no.
You know, just, you know, talking about usually good things. You know, I mean, there's not a lot of comics who feel enmity towards a lot of other comics. You know, there are comics that a lot of people will feel are cutthroat, but usually it's stories like, oh, I remember when this guy fell off a chair into a cake and didn't have extra pants to go on stage. You know, it's usually stuff like that. So,
now, do you do the circuit quite regularly? Are you do you travel a lot?
I travel. I probably do like a big trip once a month. I live in San Francisco, and most of what I, you know, a couple of weeks a month, I'll play somewhere around San Francisco, and then usually a week out of a month, I'll get down to Los Angeles because that's where the cameras are plugged in. And
really, eh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. You got to do it. LA is kind of it's interesting. You know, there's a lot of really talented, really creative people in LA, and that's where television comes out of. And sometimes, I hope the wrong person isn't listening to this, but sometimes I wonder how those really talented, creative people come up with some of the things I see on television. But you go down there, you know, and you try and do the comedy shows. And I mean, I would love to ultimately play like a believable lesbian character in a sitcom on television. I think that would be wonderful.
You would, eh?
Yeah. I think it would be great. I wouldn't necessarily have to be the center of the sitcom, but I don't want to be the wacky gay neighbor.
Right.
You know, I'm tired
right.
of the whole wacky gay, you know.
Right. Yeah, aren't we crazy?
Yeah, Secret Square, kind of. I can't remember his name. Who was the guy on the... Okay. On the Hollywood Squares. Did you ever see the Hollywood Squares?
Hollywood Squares, yeah, yeah. Oh. Paul Lynde.
Oh, Paul Lynde, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Paul Lynde to block.
Right.
Yeah, no. No.
Paul Lynde right in the middle of the square.
Yeah. So, but I think there's actually a lot of, there's a lot of really interesting stuff going on in television now. I think that television is way ahead of our government. You know what I mean? They've got, you know, Roseanne had a gay marriage. That show Friends had a gay marriage. And the ratings for those shows were really high. And yet we have, you know, eight states that I think it's eight now that have said that they won't recognize a marital union between same-sex couples, even if it's, you know, from other states. And then there's another, I think, seven that are trying to push that through.
This is a pretty big deal in the States right now, isn't it?
It's a huge deal.
Mm-hmm. And it really does vary from state to state. Essentially, each state is kind of in charge of their legislation around this?
Well, I don't understand it fully, so I'm going to kind of tell you what I know, and that's not going to be everything. But basically, if you're married in one state, you're married in every state. If you get married in New Jersey, you can move to Montana and you don't have to get married again.
Yeah.
Right. But what they're doing is they're putting these laws that say that, okay, so if people get married in Hawaii, which is apparently going to, it looks like they're going to legalize marriage in Hawaii, gay marriage in Hawaii, because of the case that's in the courts, they're basically, it's going to come down to the fact that it's unconstitutional to deny it, and that's the way it looks like it's going to go in Hawaii. So now what they're trying to do is they're trying to say, okay, well, you know, queers, go to Hawaii and get married. We don't care, because you come to our state, you're not married anymore, you don't get any of the benefits, you don't get any of the tax breaks, you don't get any of the recognition. And that is not, I think that that is not constitutional. I think for that one state to refuse to recognize that particular type of thing from another state is not constitutional. But, you know, the Constitution, somebody said to me today, looks good on paper, you know, so.
That's kind of what they're about, eh? Paperwork.
Yeah, but it's, I mean, there's so much hinges on it, you know. In the United mm-hmm. States, you, I don't know about taxes, yearly taxes here, but our income tax, if you're married to someone, you pay less in income tax. It's a tax break. You get, well, you get the toasters, and you get to have that big party, and you get to have, medical benefits, spousal medical benefits, or, you know, like if you're a cop and you're killed in the line of duty, if you're a lesbian cop, your lover wouldn't get anything, whereas if you were a straight cop, your spouse would get, you know, the appropriate benefits. And so, I mean, that's just across the board. You can think of any situation.
Yeah.
And it's also, I mean, straight marriage is such a huge institution, and it's really cool. I mean, it's beautiful, and it's, you know, all your friends are there and your family is there, and it's a great party, and it's a tremendously emotional day. And it would be great if that could be translated, if we could have that and have people feel like it didn't matter that it was two women getting married or two men getting married. It would be the same thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I just finished reading an advanced copy of Victoria Brownware's book Too Queer, and she addresses this issue a lot. And she feels, and I think I agree with her, and of course it hasn't been an issue yet in Canada, but at some point I imagine the whole gay marriage thing will be. But I feel, and she feels as well, that maybe what we should be lobbying for is, instead of the right to get married, is that you should have the recognition of your domestic partner, right? So the idea, for example, like in a place like Iceland, right, or even in Denmark, if your common law, mm-hmm. if someone lives with you, if they're your partner, they're common law, and then you have the same rights as married people.
Mm-hmm.
And what Victoria Brownworth is saying in her book is that we're concentrating our energy in the wrong area. We shouldn't be focusing on copying the institution of marriage, but we should be lobbying to get those same rights recognized, right? But in different arrangements, like for example, in the recognition of domestic partners, rather than focusing on the marriage. And her whole take on it is that marriage is historically a pretty bad deal for, and you know, for the people who are involved in it, and for so many years mm-hmm. historically has been used as a way, for example, to control women and property, and that maybe we should not look towards that as a model, but towards recognition of you know, your partner, and then having those same laws, those same benefits apply to you, but not necessarily to be married. You know, do you know what I'm saying? Is this making any sense?
It makes a lot of sense. Well,
a complex argument, but.
You know, I mean, marriage has been used for everything, you know, the princess of one country being married off to the prince of another country,
right,
to have some sort of a political unity. I mean, you can think of any example, but the actual, I mean, the theoretical, you know, idea behind a union between two people that are supposed to love and respect and take care of each other for the rest of their lives. Yeah, she's absolutely right that we should be lobbying in terms of the rights, but I disagree. I think we should be lobbying for marriage, full-on marriage.
Mm.
None of this separate but equal, or, you know, if we have the rights on paper, that's good enough. I want it all.
Right, yeah, but what she's saying is that, she's not saying that, you know, queer people shouldn't be married and heterosexuals should. She
right.
She's saying, basically, there should be some other kind of recognized arrangement between two people that's not necessarily a marriage. You'd have to read the book when it comes out. She makes a much better case of it than
yeah,
I do.
Yeah, I think, yeah. I'm not... I think if I'm ready to debate what you're saying, but
right.
since you're yeah,
I'm just yeah.
I'm stuttering on the air. I'm gonna stop now. So
well, so am I. So
okay. You know what?
Wait.
I think it's time for some Doris Day.
Oh,
excellent.
We're gonna take a musical break.
That is so cool.
And Doris Day. Now this Joanne brought in, and she's trying to. She told me before the show, slip more Doris Day into the show. I'm not sure exactly what that's about, but we'll do Doris Day, and then we'll come back.
Thank you.
That's pretty bold.
It's a great feeling to suddenly find the clouds are silver lined when the sun breaks through. It's a great feeling to walk down the street, see the folks you meet smiling back at you. As long as I've got someone to embrace, as far as I'm concerned, the world is such a lovely place. It's a great feeling, your credit is nil, you never make a mill, but nonetheless I state, if you're in love, you're feeling great. It's a great,
great feeling
to suddenly find the clouds are silver lined.
Ooh.
When the sun breaks through,
skies are blue.
It's a great,
great feeling
to walk down the street and see the folks you meet
ooh,
smiling back at you.
As long as I've got someone to embrace,
as far as I'm concerned, the world is such a lovely place.
It's a great, great feeling.
Your credit is nil, you never make a mill, but nonetheless I state,
feeling great. If you're in love, you're feeling great.
Someone to embrace, as far as I'm concerned, the world is such a lovely place.
You walk down the street and see the folks you meet smiling back at you while the sun's breaking through.
And first thing you know, your heart's all aglow, and suddenly you find
the clouds are silver lined.
It's a great,
great
feeling. Your credit is nil, you never make a mill, but nonetheless I state,
feeling great.
If you're in love,
heavens above,
I'm here to state,
you're feeling great.
Working under the direction of the music coordinator and in conjunction with the assistant music coordinator, the Music Resource Assistant will develop and maintain the music library, train and supervise music library volunteers, process music department mail, supervise the processing of new releases, maintain the card catalog and computer database, participate as a voting member of the steering committee, and provide resource support to on-air and production staff and volunteers. Strong interpersonal skills, organizational ability, and a great deal of initiative, creativity, and resourcefulness are needed. A general knowledge of the music industry and an appreciation of a variety of different types of music are assets. This is a project pay position. The candidates must have been on social assistance for the past 6 months. If interested, please forward your resume to CKUT Hiring Committee, Music Resource Assistant, 3647 University Avenue, Montreal, Quebec, H2W-T28, or fax 514-398-8261. Deadline for applications is 5 p.m., Monday, July 29th. For more information, contact Dexter X, Gordon Krieger, or John Braithwaite at CKUT, 398-6787.
This is Dykes on Mics at CKUT, and we're talking to Sabrina Matthews, who participated in last night's Queer Comics extravaganza at Club Soda, and we have just been informed that she will be performing again Wednesday night.
Wednesday night at the, now let me get the time right, Bubbling with Laughter at 7:15 at Club Soda with Dom Herrera is hosting, who is great, and Robert Schimmel is doing the show. And I was doing Bob Schimmel's act off the air, but I don't think I should do that now. Oh. And me, it's going to be a great show.
Yeah.
So, you know, if it's not sold out, go get a ticket.
Great. Now, they, you performed and then they asked you to do this extra show then?
Yeah, basically. I mean, I sort of asked, and they sort of said okay, basically. So, I mean, I don't think things are just ever off, completely offered mm-hmm. to you, but, I mean, I must have, you know, I did well enough to do something again, so I was pretty happy with that. I mean, it was just so much fun last night. It was such a great show, and you were asking Joanne if I'd ever worked with it. Scott Kennedy is the only person that I haven't worked with before, but Jason Stewart and Elvira Kurt and Suzanne Westenhofer were all on the bill, mm-hmm. and I just thought the whole show was just really well-rounded and just really tight and fun, and I just can't say enough good things about that show, but I'll stop.
So, I wouldn't mind knowing a mundane thing or two, like how long have you been doing comedy?
5 years.
5 years.
A little more than 5 years.
Yeah, eh? So that's not so long.
No, not really.
So what got you up on the stage?
Sort of a dare.
Oh, really?
I used to run a camp, and I told stories to tons and tons of kids, and a friend of mine talked me into getting up and telling stories to grown-ups, like more grown-up stories, and then that same friend took me to an open mic in San Francisco at this place called Josie's Cabaret and Juice Joint, and which is actually a really, it's a pretty important gay club in San Francisco. This guy, Donald Montwill, started it. Have you ever heard of it?
No.
It's he also started the Valencia Rose, which isn't in existence anymore, but it's been a real, it's been a stage for gay comics and a place for gay audiences to go, and you go and, you know, and you go there and you work and you can get work early on, and Donald's very encouraging, you know, if he feels like you're gonna do well. And then from there he encouraged me to go out into the straight clubs, which is really mm-hmm. probably the majority of where I work is in straight clubs, and I'm always out, and I almost always have a great response. I mean, it's just really fun, fun work.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
and so that was, I went to the open mic, and I was like, oh, I could try the open mic, you know, and then I did that a bunch of times, and eventually gave me a slot, and then so forth.
Great.
So, yeah, I still remember he gave me a Saturday night slot, and it was a 30-minute slot, which is that's a really long slot for someone for their first, you know, paid gig. I didn't even know it was a paid gig, so I go up, and I do my half hour, and I did pretty well. You know, I mean, for a first-timer, I did quite well. And I got off the stage, and I went into the back, and I remember he handed me money. And I looked at him, and I said, do you want me to give this to someone? And he said, no. He said, that's yours, and you should never take another job without asking about the money. And I was just standing there all by myself, just mouthing, the money? Ask about the money over and over again. Like, I can get paid for having a good time. I'm going to get better at this.
Yeah.
You know, and so that was that. You know, I never really, I had jobs for, I don't have a day job right now,
okay.
but I had day jobs for a while, mm-hmm. but I never really.
So now it's starting to happen in terms of making a living and.
Different stuff is happening, getting down to LA, trying some stuff out. I've done, had my first television comedy gig recently, and I also appeared on America's Most Wanted.
Oh, yes, like you described. Now, really, that was a reenactment of some.
Two lesbian bank robbers who have since been caught, in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And in like, it was from like February to May of this year, February to April of this year, which means they're actually running out of most wanted Americans. So soon, you know, it's going to be like at 11:30 this morning, someone looking like this actor robbed the Quickie Mart, you know, or maybe they'll stop the show, which would. Who
and
knows?
What did you play in
I played a lesbian stand-up comic.
Oh, you played the comic.
Yeah.
I see.
It was a really, tremendous. I had to call up my acting coach. What's my motivation here?
Well, what was it like on the set of America's Most Wanted?
It was really weird. It was the weirdest thing because when I went to audition, there were all of these, when I went to audition and a lot of the cast was going to be lesbians, there were all these straight women in there, which doesn't really matter to me, but they had sort of gone out and watched Go Fish the night before so that they could get the costuming right, and they'd, you know, they'd borrowed clothes from their friends, and they were sort of like, you know, the wrong-sized clothes, last year's lesbians, you know, sort of just like very, very Tony, you know, 470 days ago. And so they were there, and they were all going in and doing these auditions, but they were all straight, and I was sitting over in the corner sort of just chuckling at the whole thing. It was just, it was really funny. And then when I showed up for the actual taping, it was all dykes. You know, and they were like hardcore, you know, shaved heads and tattoos on the arms and leather vest and really, you know, very butch looking dykes. And I was just like, my people, I was so excited. But they had that really weird kind of L.A. bitchy attitude that some women can have. And it was so weird. They wouldn't talk to me, you know, until later when they found out I had a line and I was a principal. And then suddenly they all became interested in me. And I was just sort of, you know, buffing my nails and looking off into the distance, you know. But it was really, it was fun. I mean, the people everybody seemed pretty cool. There were a couple of people who had just moved, like one guy had just moved there from like Atlanta, and another girl who'd moved there from, you know, Minneapolis or something a couple of years before. And you just, it's the same as last night. You sit around and tell war stories, the worst gig, the best gig, the, you know, it's pretty fun.
Well, I must say, in the material that you performed last night, the part of your act that I really liked was the way you paint such a visual picture of yourself in a dress. In a bridesmaid's outfit, and I can relate to that, just the being that uncomfortable.
Oh, yeah. I think everyone can relate to that.
Yeah.
You know, everyone's...
Forced into something really ugly and scratchy and hot and horrible. And
looking like
color.
A Russian powerlifter in drag is... Yeah. is, yeah. And even people who, you know, if I talk to an audience and I say, you know, were you ever a bridesmaid, you know, and you know, a really very feminine, very beautiful woman can say, yes, I was a bridesmaid, and she still has that look in her eye, like, I've never looked like such a monkey in my life as when I was dressed up as a bridesmaid, you know, I think everybody feels that way. You just feel like a buffoon.
So I guess I just in terms of getting your stories organized, you know, for a performance, and they are true to the extent that a lot of this stuff is based on your experiences in that. And I guess I'm just wondering in terms of the craft, the whole thing, you know, the rounding out of the story and the embellishment here and the touch here. How much do you work at that? As opposed to the storytelling thing. Well, I shouldn't say as opposed to, but I guess I'm just trying to get a handle on how you kind of get your material together.
A lot of comics will sit and they will write a joke out verbatim before they do it, and sometimes I'll do that, but usually what I'll do is I'll make notes, and my notes consist of the most important words. Like, I think any language in the world has incredible subtleties. I speak only English, but I love choosing the exact word, the word that means precisely what I mean, and no other word will come as close. And when I think of those words, those are the words that I want to hit, and those are the notes that I make, and also the words that I know are funny, you know, the image that's funny. And so I'll make those notes, and I'll know that I want to use those words in the description, and I'll know that I want to, you know, hit those funny marks, you know, hit those images. But otherwise, I just sort of let it come out of my mouth. I write pretty much on stage, which is probably the most frightening way to write, because you really don't know what's going to happen. But for me, it's the best, because the pressure is on, and the audience is there, the response is instant. And I also, I don't have a lot of setup punch material. I have very little setup punch material, maybe one or two liners. I can't really figure out exactly what an audience is going to like, what people are going to think is great, what they're going to think is a great story and a funny story, until I'm in front of them. You know, so that's pretty much how I write.
Yeah.
And I can do, you know, you can, like that bridesmaid bit you were talking about, that I had told that story to a couple of friends of mine, and the first time I ever did it, because I was telling it to these friends, and they were screaming in hysterics, and all of a sudden, you know, this little thing clicked in my brain. They're laughing, you're a comic, you know, what does this mean, you know? So
this is an experiment.
Yeah.
This one works.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But... You know, so the first time I ever did the bridesmaids bit, it, it's probably almost unrecognizably, it probably hasn't changed recognizably at all from the first couple of times I did it to now.
Yeah.
You know, some jokes I will always be working on, the timing of them and the image and everything, and it's, you know, some jokes can take, I have a joke that I just, that I really feel like is finished, and that was after I had done it for 4 years, you know, off and on, the same joke, and just really got it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know.
But then at some point you're gonna, yeah, I guess you pack them away and move on to something else.
Yeah, you gotta shelve them.
Yeah.
Because the same, you want the same people to come and see you.
Yeah.
You know, and you want to be able to produce, you know, different stuff. I have some friends who come and see me fairly frequently, and if I have a joke that's kind of in the works but I don't feel like it's ready for the show that they show up at, I'll usually do it anyway, which will usually get me a new joke written that night because the pressure's on. You know, and that's always, that's good, because when my friends show up, I really feel like it, because they're so critical of me, not in a bad way, but they're, you know, they're right there, you know, they're sort of the pipeline, you know, and if I say something at a party and I think it's funny and they don't think it's funny, for a long time they would say, don't use that in your act.
Don't use that, okay?
Oh, yeah, it's so awful. I'm so glad they've stopped.
Well, we are running a bit over time, so that's okay. And thank you so much for coming down to the station. And good luck on Wednesday night.
Thank you very much.
Bubbling with Laughter.
Yes.
At Club Soda at 8 o'clock?
7:15. Yeah, the late show is the Canadian show. And the early show is Bubbling with Laughter.
Okay. Thank you, Sabrina.
You're welcome. Thank you.
That's it for us tonight. So good night.
Good night.
Benefit that's following the Punkalinga screening.
Right, and come see my new film.
That's right, you're going to be showing your film in the basement, right?
Yeah, I'm showing my new film that just premiered in New York on Saturday night. It's a trailer, and it's called Our Us We Bone One So Naked Known. It's a Super 8. I guess we're going to project it at the party.
Good. I hope it, I think it's going to go on, you're going to project it about 5 or 6 times throughout the night.
Yeah, if people ask me.
Nicely. Well, I forgot to mention before when I announced the party that the DJ is going to be playing alternative music. It's DJ Nemus. Her alias is Secret right now. And I guess it was nice talking to you, Annie.
I just want to provide some contact information if anyone is interested in submitting new works to the Punkalingus cause, and if anyone has any other questions, they can contact me at my fax is 212-673-1467, and my home address is 335 South 5th Street, number 4, Brooklyn, New York, 11211, and don't send anything bad in the mail to that address.
What do you mean by bad?
No prank jokes. So I'll find out who you are.
Okay. Thanks a lot. If anybody didn't get that information, just call the station and we'll have it for you.
Great. I'm looking forward to coming up there and getting in lots of trouble.
Good.
Okay, thanks a lot, Anne.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh, all right, closing words. Yeah, we've run over time. Thanks to Rob for letting us run over time. I haven't even seen him poke his head in. Okay, so there's a lot happening this week, as I suppose you've gathered, and thanks to...
There's one other thing. Fifth Column are playing. They're a Toronto all-girl queer band that are playing Thursday night at Cafe Campus. And G.B. Jones, one of the members of the band, is... She's got a couple films in the Punkalinga screening as well. So...
Sheesh.
Sheesh.
394-616 is the number of the station, and if you've got any questions, you might call in the next couple of minutes, and then we'll be gone. Otherwise, what? Who can they call? That was so much information about all those parties and stuff. I suppose the festival hotline.
Yeah, or here.
Or here, or you can just call CKUT generally, 398-6787. Look, somebody's calling right now. They have got a question. Okay, I think that's it for us tonight. So enjoy the rest of the festival. The festival does end on the 27th of November. So if you've got questions, go to Landrogin, call Landrogin, go to Landrogin. There are schedules there, and there's the catalog of the film festivals, and the party flyers are all there. Okay, well, thanks to our guest tonight. Thanks to Miriam for stepping in and calling New York. And, okay, well, we'll be back next week. Good night.
Good night.
Which are more dangerous, men or guns?
Both are dangerous, but only a man can kill you.
Or at least try.
Many lesbians have the misconception that AIDS is not their problem. This is wrong. There are a number of reported cases of AIDS among lesbians. Three of these are believed to be from woman-to-woman transmission. Since researchers still do not include questions to identify infected lesbians or cases of woman-to-woman transmission, statistics are difficult to obtain. Most of the lesbians who have AIDS seem to have contracted it through IV drug use. Some have had unsafe sex with infected men, or have had artificial insemination with infected semen.
As lesbians, we tend to assume we're at low risk for HIV infection. Self-definition can be confusing. Some lesbians consider any woman who has had sex with men as well as women to be bisexual. Other lesbian women who occasionally have sex with men do not consider themselves to be bisexual. It is important to remember that risk comes from what you do and not from how you label yourself.
It is possible for one woman to pass the virus on to another woman through mouth-to-vagina contact. Safer sex with women includes protection from infected blood, such as menstrual blood, and from infected cervical and vaginal secretions. Unless you're sure your partner is not HIV positive, you should not go down on her during her period, or immediately before or after. HIV present in blood can enter the bloodstream through tiny cuts inside the vagina, on your gums, and in your throat.
Use latex barriers between your mouth and your partner's vagina. Dental dams are latex squares that are available from dentists and pharmaceutical companies. Dental dams are hard to find, so make your own by cutting both ends off a non-lubricated condom, slitting it up one side, and unfolding it into a square. Hold it over your partner's vagina before using your mouth and tongue.
If you share dildos or sex toys, always cover them with a fresh condom before each use. Change the condom if you go from your vagina to your partner's.
If you like to put your fingers inside each other's vaginas, or if you fist, wear latex gloves to prevent transmission through small cuts or rashes on your hands.
Remember that anyone can transmit HIV by sharing needles for injection with an infected person. If you must use IV drugs, never share needles, and always clean your fix with bleach.
The biggest mistake we can make is to think that because we are lesbians, we are immune to HIV. Talk about safer sex with your lovers and friends.
Remember, we are all people living with AIDS.
Yes, it's Lori and Lydia Wanch. Guess which one I am. And we're listening to, we're trying to get pissed drunk.
Act 3 to 5 p.m. Fridays on CKUT 90.3 FM.
Lori.
Lydia.
It's your turn, baby. Go down and do the do now.
Yo, DJ. Yo, DJ.
Can you say CKUT-FM?
I'm sorry, I can't.
What is that?
CKUT.
Very...
Our little family segment was My Sister by the Juliana Hatfield Truth 3.
Oh, that's nice.
And John has something else for us now.
And we'll do this maybe every couple of months, a little update on the baby, because of course they grow so much every couple of days.
I didn't even recognize her last time I saw her. She'd grown so much.
Yesterday, she established hand-eye coordination. That was a big day. We marked it down on the calendar. She reached out for an object and grabbed it.
Wow. Thank you.
not lying.
Shame.